Thank you so much, Karen, for inviting me. It's delightful to be here. This isn't really my métier. I'm not a religious person in any way, but I have friends here, and I didn't even know. Willie Foley is here. I haven't seen Willie in 25 years. Michael French, who performed my wedding ceremony about 35 years ago. Dorothy Critcher, who's been doing wonderful work in Baltimore as well. I entitled, Dick Humphries, let me not forget. I entitled this talk, Down and Out in Baltimore and Towson, because I've been thinking about George Orwell. And that's one of his greatest books, and his first, was about his experience being extremely poor and homeless in Paris and in London. And if you haven't read that 1932 tome, I highly recommend it. It's on our reading list for books about homelessness and poverty. Along with the source of the quote in my brief bio, the famous quote from Tom Joad in Grapes of Wrath. And if you haven't read that recently, or seen the film, they're both wonderful expositions of what poverty and homelessness are like, and more importantly, the structural causes of these phenomena. Now, Orwell said in Down and Out the following: there exists in our mind a sort of ideal or typical tramp. That was the word they used, you know, in the 30s for people who were homeless. A repulsive, rather dangerous creature who would die rather than work or wash and wants nothing but to beg, to drink, to rob. I'm not saying, of course, that tramps are ideal characters. I'm only saying that they are ordinary human beings. And if they are worse than other people, it is not because of them. It's the result of their way of life. There's so much truth in that. People experiencing homelessness are folks whose desperation characterizes every action. They're the poorest folks in society. They're people who are so poor that they don't have a key to their own place to live. That essentially is what homelessness is. It's poverty without a key. And I hope today we'll talk a little bit about what homelessness is, the phenomenology of it, how people experience it a little bit, the structural causes of it, and then most importantly, what we can do about it. You know, there's no point in just describing a phenomenon. There was a famous 19th century philosopher who told us that the point is to change it. And we can change homelessness, we can even end it, but it's going to take a lot of concerted action from us. But let's talk a little bit about the numbers. How many people are experiencing homelessness? This is an important issue today, because the last two presidential administrations have told us that homelessness is on the decline, that their policies have been so effective that they're reducing the numbers of people who are sleeping on the streets. Palpably false. Just like to walk downtown, or in the Park Heights neighborhood, or in South Baltimore, or in East Baltimore, or in West Baltimore, you'll see more and more people who have literally no place to go. It's certainly not true that homelessness is declining. The city and the county, and I'll talk about both a little bit, are required to conduct a census of people who are sleeping on the street or in shelters. They have to do this every 2 years in order to continue to receive their federal funding. The city's census has frankly been poorly organized for many years, and in fact has covered only tiny parts of the city. The downtown area pretty much is all covered in a little bit of South Baltimore. The last time it was done, that was 2013, and before that, 2011. Now in 2011 in the city, 4,008 people were located on the night of January 26, 2011, 4,008 people. close to 1,000 of those folks were sleeping on the street, and the remainder were in shelters and transitional housing. Amazingly, even though the city had no additional affordable housing between 2011 and 2013, amazingly, only 2,638 people were found on January 25th of 2013. So it appeared as if homelessness had declined very dramatically in Baltimore over those 2 years. But no one could find a cause for this. I think the cause was simply different methodology of counting. And please be aware that these numbers are clearly undercounts, that they have to be, because no one goes into the 42,000 vacant houses in our city. You know, we're number 3 in the country in vacant houses. We've done a very good job of producing vacant houses. Only Detroit and Cleveland do it better. In counting, people have nowhere to live. No one goes into the vacant houses. No one goes to the dark, deep parts of our hearts. No one goes into the garages that are downtown where so many people find shelter. Soon no one will go under the portico of the War Memorial Building across from City Hall, because the state and the city just spent $500,000 to keep homeless veterans from finding some shelter and succor under the portico of their own building. $500,000. And you know, just last week, the city sent the police and the public works department to move all the folks who were living under the James Falls Expressway, to move them where? Nowhere, to move them nowhere, but just to make sure that they weren't as visible to us. I think, you know, Bishop Barclay once wondered, if a tree falls in a forest and no one is there to hear it, does it make a sound? And similarly, today we can wonder if thousands of people are experiencing homelessness and have nowhere to live, and we can't see them, then perhaps the homelessness has disappeared as they have. That must be the philosophy of our man, alas. But the count, nonetheless, the count was 2,638 people found on one night in 2013, and that's the official number of people experiencing homelessness in Baltimore. Now, the homeless researchers, and there's, you know, a big industry of people who research and write about homelessness and get paid fairly well for it, they say that you have to multiply that number by about 6 to determine how many people over the course of a year are experiencing homelessness. So we could say very conservatively, and it's the only aspect of conservatism that I accept, we could say very conservatively that there are 15,000 people each year in Baltimore who experience homelessness. We used to say 50,000, that's probably closer to the truth. We know there are more than 120,000 eviction notices delivered in Baltimore every year. 120,000? We only have 290,000 households. Almost half of the households are in danger of being evicted every year. So, again, homelessness is poverty without a key. If you don't have a key to your own place, then you're homeless. And how many Baltimore families are close to not having that key? Well, we have some data about that, too. Before I get to that, though, let me go back to Towson, to Baltimore County. How many of you are from Baltimore County? A fair number. And if you're from Anne Arundel County, Howard County, Carroll County, Hartford County, Cecil, I apologize. I didn't bring details for you. They're easily, well, fairly easily obtained. In Baltimore County, in 2013, on the night of January 25th, the county counted 919 people who did not have a key, who were sleeping either on the street, by the side of the road, or in a shelter. And there are some shelters in Baltimore County, not much, but there are some. That number is about a quarter of what was counted in the city. We also know that poverty, though, is increasing more rapidly in suburban areas now than in urban areas. So the problem of homelessness in Baltimore County is expanding, and it's expanding fairly quickly because of the disparity between people's incomes and the price of housing. Right? When we get to the structural part, that's what we're going to talk about. The disparity between incomes and the price of housing, because fundamentally, that's homelessness. Now, these 919 people in Baltimore County, multiply that by 6, and you get close to 6,000 people in Baltimore County who may be experiencing homelessness every year. There are some services in the county. I said there are a few shelters. Healthcare for the Homeless has a clinic in Baltimore County. We have, you know, very grand clinic here in the city, down on Falls Road. The services are very important. Alone, they don't end homelessness, but they're extremely important for people who are experiencing homelessness. But we're going to get back to the numbers a little bit. Now, aside from the number of people who are found during these surveys, there are other ways of thinking about how many of our neighbors, friends, and relatives are either homeless or at risk of being homeless. I found that one really good way to think about it is to calculate the number of housing units that exist at certain rent levels and compare that to the number of people whose income would permit them to pay that level of rent. And here are some numbers for you that will give you the magnitude of the problem that we face just in the city and the county. In the county, there are 48,000 households with incomes below the way this is calculated. It's called the area median income. It's the median income for the metropolitan area. The area median income is about $85,000 a year. Person with, or a household with an income of 30% of that is considered to be extremely poor with respect to housing. In the county, there are 48,000 households whose incomes are below 30% of the area median. There are approximately 11,000 housing units that they could afford. Could afford means that you shouldn't pay more than 30% of your income for housing. That's what's considered affordable. Until 1968, it was thought to be 25%. All of a sudden, it went up to 30%. But, you know, nonetheless, 11,000 units for 48,000 households. Every household that doesn't rent one of those units is at risk of being homeless or is homeless. That's Baltimore County. That's a pretty big problem. That's more than 35,000 affordable housing units needed to end homelessness in Baltimore County. You may have read in the Sun just last week that there's a new plan in Baltimore County to end homelessness. They have a 10-year plan to end homelessness. Baltimore City has one. The state of Maryland has one. The one in the county was just announced last week, and it has 7 elements. And strangely, none of those elements is to create more affordable housing. The county's been very good at preventing affordable housing from being created there. You know, the county doesn't have any public housing. It doesn't have a public housing authority. It never has had one. It may very well never have one. But certainly doesn't have one now. It does have about 5,000 housing vouchers that help people with housing, and then it has these 11,000 units that are relatively affordable. But the housing plan, the homelessness ending plan in the county, doesn't include any affordable housing. So here we have this problem. We need 35,000 affordable housing units. For those of you who live in Baltimore County, it would be extremely helpful if you contacted the county executive's office and asked where the 35,000 affordable housing units that are necessary, where they will come from, because it doesn't seem to be a plan for them. Now let's return to the city. How many of these extremely poor families are there in the city, and how many housing units are there for them? Well, the U.S. Census Bureau tells us that there are 86,000 of these extremely poor households in Baltimore City. 86,000. And for those 86,000, there are 25,000 housing units that they could afford to rent. for in the city, we need about 60,000 housing units to end homelessness here. Seems like a daunting task, but it's even harder because no one is planning for any. I shouldn't say any. The city's official plan for housing calls for creating 1,600 units of affordable housing, housing affordable to very poor people, over the next 5 years. So we need 60,000 units, they'll create 1,600. We'll only have 58,400 households who are at risk of or experiencing homelessness here in Baltimore City. This is what we face. This is the structural situation. This is the gap between justice and injustice, baldly put. There's lots more data, of course, there's always lots of data. And we'll talk some more about some of them, perhaps we'll have a dialogue about some of these issues. We heard earlier, and thank you for that information about income inequality. That's one of the key factors that perpetuates injustice here. That 19% of all the income in the United States each year goes to 1% of the population. That 10% of the population is 48% of all the income. That the income of the lowest 20% of the population over the last 40 years has declined by 34%. Declined. These are the poorest people in the country. Their income has declined by 34%. While the income of the top 1% over the last 40 years has increased by about 40%. So with these income disparities, with continuing increases in the price of housing, more and more people experiencing homelessness. It's sort of Newtonian. It's sort of like a natural law. If people can't afford housing, then they're at risk of being homeless. And none of the homeless plans that I've seen, the federal ones, the state ones, the county and city ones, none of them call for a significant increase in affordable housing. Now the county one, city one too, the key to them is that people should become self-sufficient. I'm not sure what that means. Maybe they're Emersonians. You know, he wrote a famous essay about self-sufficiency. Maybe they're Thoreauvians. I don't know. There was a time before about 1830 when effectively there wasn't a category of homelessness in the United States. Because if you didn't have the money to buy a house or to rent a house, you just built a place to live. You found some land and you built a place to live. But by about 1830, that was generally not possible. And we began seeing in cities people who were sleeping rough. And cities began to either do something positive, like create places for people to live, more often something negative, arrest vagabonds. And we still have in Baltimore City this law called being a rogue and vagabond. And if you're walking down the street and you don't have any ID and any money, you can actually get arrested for being a rogue and vagabond. But I digress. So these numbers are kind of frightening. The plans, the official plans, are kind of useless. But we have an opportunity to do better. Let's start by just talking about three structural elements of our political economy that are fundamental to homelessness. The first is poverty. That's not surprising. Almost everybody who's experiencing homelessness is poor, very poor. There are a few exceptions. I was the money manager for one of my clients at Healthcare for the Homeless in 1985. And she had three certificates of deposit, each for $100,000 in the bank, and I had to manage it and roll it over for her. She wouldn't spend a penny of it. This was a 70-year-old woman who rode the bus every night because she had no place to live. But she didn't want to spend her own money because she wanted when she died for it to go to two places that had been very kind to her, University of Maryland Hospital and my sister's place. So she gave them, in her will, the money. But you know, that's really rare. I was qualified more than once as an expert witness in court cases around homelessness, and I had to count how many homeless folks I've worked with. But back in 1990, that number was 10,000. And of those 10,000, I meant about two people who weren't extremely poor. So homelessness is about poverty, extreme poverty. In Baltimore City, close to 25% of our 620,000 residents, 25%, are officially poor. About 36.5% of our children are officially poor. Poverty, as we heard again this morning, isn't just about not having the ability to get enough food and to get a place to live, but it certainly is about those things. And the folks that we know, our neighbors, so many of our neighbors are really, really poor and can't afford enough to eat and can't afford a place to live. So poverty is the number one issue that we need to deal with if we're going to solve homelessness along with the housing problems, and I'll get to that in a moment. How do we address poverty? Right, if we had the solution to that, we could market it, and we wouldn't be poor, or poor people would still be poor. Well, concretely, there's some things to do. The state raised the minimum wage during this legislative session. It's going to be all of $10.10 an hour by 2018. The housing wage, that's what you have to earn in order to afford a place to live. The housing wage in our area is $24.06 an hour. The minimum wage is about 42% of the housing wage. So I can guarantee you that once we raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour in 2018, we will not have addressed the homelessness and poverty problem at all. There's something you all can do about it, right? All of you are represented on the city council and the county council in Annapolis and in Washington, D.C. And I'm sure you're all making known to your representatives that 10-10 an hour, which is also what President Obama has called for, is completely insufficient. It doesn't end poverty and it doesn't end homelessness for sure. We also do have a safety net. Now, it's in shreds, but we do have one. And for a completely and totally disabled adult, if you can achieve, go through and succeed in the arduous process of proving that you're completely and totally disabled, you may qualify for this benefit. It's called SSI, Supplemental Security Income. And it will pay you $721 per month. There is no place in the United States in which you can rent a place to live for $721 a month. Even if you were willing to spend 100% of your income on a place to live, you very likely continue to be homeless if you qualify for SSI. And it's very hard to qualify. Well, we could increase the amount of money that we provide to people who are extremely poor and extremely disabled, right? People who get SSI. We can increase it so that it at least pays a housing wage instead of 14% of a housing wage that keeps people homeless. So increase the minimum wage, increase SSI. Then, you know, we still do have a welfare program. It used to be called the Aged Families with Dependent Children. We now call it TCA, Temporary Cash Assistance. Do you know how much a family of two receives per month if they can qualify for it, and most people can't? You get $559 a month. There is no place in the United States where you can rent affordably a place to live for $559 a month. It's completely up to the state how much they pay. There would be no reason that you could not call the governor's office and your senator and delegate in Annapolis and say, this is completely and totally insufficient. We are forcing families with dependent children to be at risk of homelessness every month. And then finally, there's a state benefit for single adults who don't qualify or don't yet qualify for the federal benefit. It's called TDAP, Temporary Disability Assistance Program. And it pays $185 per week. No, Yes, per month. $185 per month. Now, get out the Baltimore Sun. Well, most people don't even get it anymore, but you can look at it online. Look at the rooms for rent. And find one for $185 a month. I challenge you. Find one. If you can find one, I will bake you a cake. Right. Yes, here, here.
Right. And wasn't that $185 a month back
if in fact you ever get your disability, yes, you have to pay that for money to come. It is a loan. Yes, good point.
If they fill out the right paperwork, because if they don't,
you don't. That's right. And most people who apply for the federal benefit, as I said, I don't get it. 75% of people are turned down the first time they apply. It then takes 18 months to appeal that, and then about 30% of people do get it, and you still don't have enough, and then you have to pay back the money that they lent you. It's quite a racket. It's quite a racket. But we can work on making these public policies better. In and of itself, that won't end homelessness, but it might give some people a fighting chance to get off the street or out of their abandoned dominium. That's the income to poverty part. I said there were three parts, three structural elements of homelessness. And the second one, of course, is housing. You've heard, and I'm sure you know, this terrible mismatch, this gap between the number of affordable housing units and people's incomes. It's a very simple calculation. If you can't afford housing, then you're going to become homeless. Now, there are some federal programs to help with that, and there's even one state program. The federal programs are called public housing and housing choice vouchers, and there are a couple of other really tiny ones. They're being eviscerated, and it didn't start with this administration, it didn't start with George Bush, and it didn't start with his father, and it didn't start with Bill Clinton. It's been going on at least since 1974. 1949, the U.S. adopted the United States Housing Act. And the Housing Act said that every American should have access to decent, safe, and affordable housing. Every American. 1949. Starting in 1974, Richard Nixon introduced a way to make profits out of housing poor people. It's called the Section 8 program. And as they began to fund the Section 8 program, they began to defund public housing. But at its height, we had about 1.2 million units of public housing, completely and totally inadequate, the lowest number and percentage of any industrialized country. The average European country, about 25% of the housing, is public housing. And there's no shame in living in it. Lots of people live in it, lots of wealthy people live in it. In the city of Vienna, 60%. Of all the housing in the city of Vienna, it's public housing, and it's beautiful. It's designed by the best architects in the world, and they build 5,000 new units every year. But here, as we demonize the poor, we've demonized the places they live, public housing. And we've been reducing the supply. We had 1.2 million units, now we have about a million units, and you may have heard that over the last year, the Housing Authority of Baltimore has announced that of its 10,000 units of public housing, they are selling, giving 4,000 units to private developers so they can make money from them. Yes. The first prime directive of capitalism is if you can make a profit from it, then you must make a profit from it. And now public housing is an area where profits will be made. So we're declining the number of units of public housing, which means more people are experiencing homelessness, of course. These are some of the housing policies, public policies, that are making things worse and not better. And we need to resist them. Not only resist them, and we've built a pretty good movement in Baltimore to resist the privatization of public housing. I don't think we'll win, but we're making it more difficult for the powers that be to do it. I mean, that's pretty much all we accomplish these days. Just make it more difficult for them to be unjust. There is a positive alternative, though, that we could be promoting. What if housing were not a center for profit, but rather the embodiment of a right. Now, you read Article 25 of the Declaration of Human Rights, the United Nations. If housing were a right, then we would build a supply of housing that was affordable to everyone. And perhaps people would contribute to it the amount that they could, from each according to her abilities, and to each according to her needs. You contribute what you can to housing, and then you get decent affordable housing. We could have a political economy that works that way. Can you imagine that? George Orwell could imagine it. He worked for that every year of his life, every day of his life. He had three principles, you know, that he followed. The first was that communication should be as clear as humanly possible. And the second one was that people should be as free as a society can permit people to be free. And the third was that everybody ought to be equal. He was a socialist, you know, George Orwell was a socialist. These days, the only Orwellian books that people read are Animal Farm in 1984, but they're the least important books that he wrote. He was a socialist throughout his life. Anyway, I digress again. We're going to get back to Orwell in a couple minutes. Time.
Maybe we could pause, do the rest of the service, quickly grab coffee, but come back if you're willing to stay for a while.
Oh, that's fine. Let me then just say two more things, and I'll say them very quickly. We have these three structural principles of homelessness: poverty, housing. The third one I haven't mentioned yet, but it's important to you all, and it's called war. Until we end the perpetual war that the United States is waging on the rest of the world, we're going to have a real hard time dealing with poverty and lack of housing. 19% of the total federal budget is spent on war. 55% of all the discretionary spending at the federal level is spent on war. $640 billion a year is spent on war. And just 4 hours of that spending would fix up all the bad housing in Baltimore. 4 hours of that spending. So we have to stop war and war spending. And finally, another Orwell quote. After he had spent a couple of years being poor and homeless in Paris and in London, he said, "Still, I can point to one or two things that I have definitely learned by being hard up. I shall never again think that all tramps are drunken scoundrels, nor expect a beggar to be grateful when I give him a penny. Nor be surprised if men who are out of work, women too, lack energy. Nor shall I subscribe to the Salvation Army, nor refuse a handbill, nor enjoy a meal at a smart restaurant. And that is a beginning."